So this is Watch Talk Across the Pond. We've got an absolutely amazing episode today. And joining me in this episode is Bill, who is not a watch snob, and David, who is Perpetuality. And you're also that watch addict on Instagram. So brilliant, brilliant. Right, so today's episode is we're going to look at our three watch choices. We've got to sell all our other watches, and we've got £10,000 to spend, and they are the only three watches we can have. Okay, so I will admit this has taken me a lot of time to work out. I've gone through lots of changes and things, but we're really looking forward to what you've got, guys. I've also got Abdul, unfortunately, couldn't make it from Abdullah Watches. I've got his three watches, and I've also got Stephen's, I can't remember Stephen's address, social media address. That's really bad, isn't it? I'll find that out in a minute. But I've also got Stephen's three watches as well at some point in time. So brilliant. Great to have you. Anyway, guys, how are you all going? Okay.
Great to be here.
As great as one can be for Saturday, I think. I've cool. got to go a little bit dry, so I'm envious of your drinks.
Yeah,
we've got drinks.
I've got to meet the in-laws after this, and it's going to be a little bit of a sober meeting, so I have to be sober for that, right. Yeah.
Well, I've got Welsh whiskey, Penderyn, which I got as a birthday present off a friend of mine. So I think I better do it all justice. So this is to Mike, one of my climbing friends who gave me this. It's Saturday night, isn't it? So we've got to have a drink. What have you got, Bill?
I've got the finest of Texas-made vodka.
Tito's, yeah. You can't go wrong with Tito's.
You can't go wrong with it,
man. I've not heard of it. So we've got Bill from America and David from Canada. Near the Rockies?
Really?
Yeah, near the Rockies. Yes, that's right. I'm more towards Western Canada, facing British Columbia.
Sweet.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So what
all a form of British, if you think about it, because we've got British Columbia, New England, and England.
In England, yeah.
That's brilliant. A good way of looking at it. Yeah.
What time zones have we got? So, Bill, you're five hours behind me, so it's 6:36 for you. Sorry, 6:26. And what are you, Dave? You about 7 or 8 hours behind
maybe? Yeah, I'm right now it's about 4:30, half past 4 p.m.
Yeah, so you're seven hours, aren't you?
Yep, just about thereabouts.
Yeah. Oh wow, can't believe it, can you? Well, I'm 11:26 already. I've got to get up and go and hiking with my mountaineering club quite early tomorrow morning, so cheers. Yeah,
you'll be ripe and ready to do that, I'm sure. After a couple of drinks and a good watch talk, that sets the tone for a good hike, I think.
Brilliant. Well, can I just start by, I'll give you a few facts about my selection without giving any watches away, and then just go round, so I sort of thing. So I'm going to give you a few facts about my selection. All three watches are in-house movement.
Okay.
All three watches are different brands. Different brands, but all in-house. One of my watches is 5,100, one is 4,220, and one is 680, and they add up to exactly £10,000. Exactly. And that is list prices that are all over the place. I've got a diver, a field stroke dress, and a chronograph. Okay.
All the bases.
Covering the bases. David, what about you? Give us some facts.
Yeah, I'm not quite there with the in-house. I think one of them is an in-house. The other one's debatable, as their movements are widely used across the industry at this time. And the third one is more of a member of a big conglomerate, but with a well-storied history that you can trace back to be one of the earliest watchmakers.
Oh, I like that. I'm really interested. And Bill, what have you got?
Mine is a watch that I saw on Sky Mall magazine. Another one that is something that has always fascinated me. It's a hybrid between a smartwatch and a mechanical watch.
Okay.
And the other one is something that I just kind of threw together because I had $1,200 to spend. $1,200 to spend. So I said, fuck it, I'll just pick this one.
Brilliant. Okay, guys. So we've got to now. So we've got our listeners sort of really interested. We've drawn them into this. Hopefully our listeners can be thinking of their own choices as well and see if they would match any of ours.
Put it in the comments.
And we need to do a wristwatch check next. So, Bill, what's on your wrist today?
I've got something. Speaking of British, across the pond, we got the Christopher Ward.
Hey,
nice. Very nice.
They're heavy as fuck. I mean, they're heavy.
Well made. Good watches. That was my joint first ever proper watch.
Yeah.
It's a nice
solid
one.
Watch. I like it. Swiss made. Doing a video on it, so I got to come up with a review soon.
Wonderful. No, Christopher Ward has really come into its own with a lot of really interesting releases in the past year or
so. At the minute, they've got a lot of good ones out there. Billy's coming over to England in February.
Okay.
I don't know. We've put it out a bit in social media just lately, haven't we, Bill, and our podcast and things. And we're hoping to visit the Christopher Ward shop in London.
Factory. They actually. They said yes to us coming to the factory.
Yeah, amazing.
The first date, like they got to find a date in, if I'm not saying this right, Manshire, something along those lines.
Right. Okay. The factory as well as the shop. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, I think if you don't leave with a watch, then you've done well or bad. I'm not sure which way to look at that, but I'm sure you'll have a great time.
And you'll be wearing that watch when we go, won't you, Bill? No doubt.
That's the only reason why I bought it.
Yeah, brilliant. So, Davey, what have you got on your wrist today?
I've actually got my favorite GMT on my wrist, which happens to be the Longjing Zulu Time.
Oh, nice.
With the anthracite dial and the green bezel.
That is really nice. Yeah.
Yes. It's I think it's what I'd like to call the guilt-free GMT.
That's really nice. I will say, Bill, that David and Stephen are both interviewed on my podcasts are pretty much my two favorite people who've got watches that I like. They're sort of like, you know, if I had to take a collection off someone or swap a collection, it would be either David or Stephen. They are my sort of watch collection gods, I think.
I could tell David's got a fire collection.
He's got a really good collection. Yeah, really good taste. We've got similar tastes as well, haven't we?
We do. I think we have our penchant for nice Seikos, of course.
We do like Seikos.
Yeah, and then we have our penchant for Tudors, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. And a couple of, I would like to say, more dressy pieces, Grand Seikos and of the like. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, we definitely are. So what do you think I've got on today, David? Can you guess? What brand?
Oh, the first comes to mind is the Alpinist Ginza, of course.
Oh, he's just too good. He's just too good.
There we go. Yeah.
It's the 1959 reinterpretation, the Seiko Alpinist Ginza. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Fantastic. Yeah, you got it, mate. So who is going to reveal their first watch? Bill, go on, you go.
Expensive first?
You go. So of your three choices.
All right. My first most expensive watch. Should we say the most expensive?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay to what?
Yeah. Go to the most expensive.
All right. So the first watch on my list has been one of the watches that's evaded me for a long time. I saw it on Sky Mall magazine when I was about maybe 10. And me and my dad rushed around the island that we were going to. I think it was like Aruba. To find this watch, and we found it, and it was way out of obviously our price range. And this is the Romain Jerome DNA Moondust. Now, no one's ever heard of this brand because I feel like it's one of those brands that no one's ever heard of. But basically, they took the rocks from the moon. I mean, like literally, like specimen from the moon to create the dial of these watches. So basically, this company will use like Titanic pieces for their movements or like certain weird things that people know about to create watches. And this one just happens to be a piece from the moon.
Oh, wow.
So basically the entire dial looks exactly like the hands of the International Space Station, the big fan.
Wow.
And then on it has like a little array of little astronauts on the tip of the moon. And the second hand looks like a rover spinning around. It is incredibly beautiful with craters and all that cool stuff. And it comes in at a price of $6,734.55.
Nice. Oh, that's
money
that's
well
really
spent.
That's out there, mate. Yeah, I like it. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, it's really good. Yeah. David, you're next. What have you got?
Okay. So we're just clarifying, going with the most expensive one first?
Yeah.
Okay. This was a challenging choice for me. I think lately I've gone on a mentality of looking at non-hype watches, just looking at the community right now, and that is the watch community. In the past year or so, we've just been inundated with a wide selection of watches that are unobtainable by measure of long wait lists. And of course, you know, you do have to get onto the list by buying something else before you get there, which I don't think is conducive to a $10,000 watch collection, in my opinion, because then it gets out of hand. Yeah. So what I've selected is something that's controversial, but I also think if you know watches and if you like simple, clean, but effectively a storied watch at that, you can't go wrong with a Panerai 512. Oh, and that's nice. The 42 millimeter radial mirror case without the crown guards that make a Panerai a Panerai, which is of course controversial, but this is the precursor before they went over to the larger case with the crown guards, of course.
Yeah.
So that you have the traditional sandwich dial, and you can get them for around $6,500 Canadian. I'm working Canadian right now because that's what I know. but what I think it represents is every man and every woman and every dog should try a Panerai given the circumstances at least once. And I will be quite honest, I've not been a Panerai guy. Really? Not since, I haven't really been keen on their watches for quite a long time. And I've been collecting for close to about 17 years, almost half my life. Yeah. And the reason for that is I just found that the majority of the Panerais I really, really admire are either far too large or far too expensive. And now recently Panerai has stepped into controversial collaborations with the name brands like Razer, who make gaming peripherals, which I'm still trying to wrap my head around as an enthusiast myself. But the Pan 512 would be my first choice and the most expensive on my list.
Nice. Well, I know myself and Bill, we are Panerai fans, and I'm fairly new to the table, like yourself, actually, on Panerai. And I must admit, I do like the crown guards and all, you know, the old thing. I did try one on for the first time about a month ago in the watch show. I was at a watch show in London, helping out on the Boulder stand, and somebody had a Panerai on who was looking at the watches, and I said, "Oh, Panerai, oh, try it on. And it just amazing. And I've now tried one on. I'm submitting, you know. So I was close to putting a Panerai on my list as well, but I didn't.
Okay.
but I think great choice.
I love Panerai, but I feel like the fact that they social media, they posted a fake one and didn't even know it.
Yeah.
Says a lot, you know.
That was an uncomfortable moment, I think, for both the watch community and the brand in total. And you know, that kind of speaks for just their choice of movements and their choice of how they like to have their watches right now as of present time. But let's try to separate that from the fact that, you know, out of all the watchmakers that are closest to the crown, and that is Rolex, and I really do not like when we fly too close to the sun with Rolex. It's always a controversial take with anything with Rolex. I think I am finding that as I progress through collecting different watches, the story of Panerai of old is quite endearing.
Yeah.
And their attachment with Rolex and manner.
Everything. Yeah.
Exactly. So no, I fully understand where you're coming from, Bill. And I was of that mind too.
But trying them on is so much more like a different experience.
So I think so. Yeah.
So big. I mean, the one I tried on was huge, but it was just so beautiful. Just the dial alone was
absolutely. And now they're returning. Well, I wouldn't say they're returning, but they're kind of moving forward in a direction that has more reasonable case sizes for the majority of wrists. With the Coranta, the Panerai Coranta, and the 40 mil to 42 millimeter, they're kind of striking that nice balance, I find. And I think it's just a matter of time that more and more individuals get pulled into it and get more interested within the brand itself. So all I can say is, love it.
Good choice,
love Panerai.
Yeah. I think one day the three of us will all be Paneristi. we'll be a Panaristi. We'll come back on and we can be, you know, we can do a wristwatch check and we can all have a Panerai on.
Absolutely.
That's what I reckon will happen one day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I must admit, listening to what you just said as well, my first choice was originally going to be the Rolex Milgauss.
Okay. But
there's a problem. It would have left very little budget for the other two watches.
Sure.
So I went off that one. And then I thought, well, I might as well make my most expensive the diver watch. So it is a diver watch.
Mm.
42 diameter, 300 meter water resistance. It's a master chronometer. I believe in house movement.
Yes.
Omega Seamaster.
Okay.
Blue. I do like the grey dial with a blue bezel, but reasons will be revealed later. I've actually gone for the blue dial because I've gone different colours as well. Blue dial with the Guilloche wave and blue bezel. Omega Seamaster is my first choice, and that's comes in at £5,100.
That's a wonderful choice. And I have to say that of all the, you know, the words and superlatives you can toss at a watch, the Omega kind of takes a lot of them and puts them in one very compelling watch that is, I would say, and I've personally owned the black dial of the same one that you're mentioning.
Yeah,
that's right. On the bracelet. By far above and beyond, it is a remarkable dive watch you cannot go wrong with. And when you see the dial in person and how it's been cut out, every bit of that dial detail shows up with every bit of light that hits it. It's almost got me in trouble crossing the street a couple of times. So I say amazing, wonderful choice.
Thank you.
As you know, Omega was my first watch, so I am not going to be upset about that.
Yeah.
Cool. Guys, can I just quickly read out Stephen's? Stephen's choices. Let me just see if I get him on social media. Stephen, he'll come up. I'm sure he will. Oh, here we go. Tick talking. He's on the top panel on me thing. Tick talking. Stephen from Tick Talking. I know. He's one of our regular listeners on Watchdog Across the Pond, and the problem is he lives in Kuala Lumpur, and it is six in the morning, 6 a.m. Sunday morning there. So otherwise, I think he would have joined us. So let me just go through his three watch choices. He's got, and I knew he was keen on this because he told me recently, a Tudor Pelagus 39. Which comes in at £3,100. It's got a Fara Chrono Classic 2.1. I saw Fara at the watch show I was at, and their quality of their watches is amazing. Absolutely amazing. So I
would have to agree.
I followed Fara, but now I've seen their watches and tried some on. They are worth, I thought they were a bit expensive, but they're worth it. And the other one is at Philippe Pick You Lick 4000. So that's just a little bit of a different one that Stephen has got quite a lot of alternative watches. So Stephen's, if Abdul doesn't join us by the time we've done the next round, I'll read Abdul's out. What do you think of those three choices, guys?
Oh, wow, I gotta say he's an eclectic individual to say that. Ferrer, for example, I think that's one of the brands that have struck such a nice balance between interesting watch releases, affordability, and also the fact that they've got a bit of a cult following in the community too. Definitely, which I always think if you've got a very loyal following, you're doing something right.
Yeah,
and that definitely is what Ferrer is right now.
I just could not believe the quality. When I tried those pieces on, the quality, you know, as well as I want a Panerai in my life, I want a Fara as well. Yeah. I actually quite like the World Timers. They do three different World Timers, and if you've seen them, I did try them on and look at them at the watch show in particular, which is, you know, on my sort of would like list. So, and the chronographs are really good. The one he actually sent the picture through was the Salmon dial with blue hands and blue numbers and everything.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's a nice choice. Very nice choice.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Right, let's go again then. So what do you want to do, Bill? Do you want to go for the cheapest or the next most expensive? You choose.
I'll go for the next most expensive.
Okay, next most expensive. You lead the way, mate.
My next most expensive is the Frederic Constantint, however the fuck you want to say it, hybrid, which comes in around $2,200. The hybrid is a mix between mechanical and smartwatch. It's an automatic watch with a battery in the back that actually tracks your sleep, your steps, your heart rate. It's like basically having a smartwatch, but it has an automatic open case back. Thing is wicked cool. I mean, the dial isn't really that like attention grabbing, but the fact that it does all these functions really grabs my attention. You know, it's like, it's a perfect balance between I like watches and I also want to know how healthy I am.
I love it. It's kind of like a gussied up G-Shock in a tuxedo that took its full degrees and it's got its master's too, right?
Yeah,
and it's well primed to represent itself.
Exactly.
Cool. Amazing. Cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, Bill, but there's a cat in your bedroom. Yeah.
The only person I'm getting tonight, guys.
Oh, he's your cat. That's good. I thought it was just a stray that come in. Right. Good choice. And I know nothing about this brand, but I know everyone really rates this brand. Everyone, you know, says this is the brand. And I think where other brands have lost their, you know, they've gone down, prices have gone down. This brand, it stayed strong as well, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's a good brand. Mm. And I just like the fact that you can get the, because a lot of people will fight you and say, the reason why I have a smartwatch is so I know all these fucking things. Well, that's great. But you can also get the beauty of having an automatic watch with these things attributed to it. I think that's kind of an awesome. I think the reason, like something about automatic watches, it's like symbiotic, you know, like you have to be moving for the watch to move. It's like it relies on you and you rely on it. And I think it's kind of a beautiful thing. And I think it would get a hell of a lot more people into the watch game if people adapted this versus like a iWatch or whatever the hell they're called. You know?
Sure. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's interesting you say that because I think it's Frederic Constantin, or maybe I'm saying it wrong.
I have no clue.
Oh, Frederic Constant. Sorry. My apologies. I'm thinking of Vacheron for some reason in my head. Frederic Constant. I think they're a highly underrated brand by all measures because the watches that they put out are every bit of class and quality. The ones I've interacted with is the Slimline Moonphase with the classic Slimline Moonphase with the open case back that opens up kind of like a pocket watch, and you're able to see their in-house caliber. And I think for the money that they're asking, it doesn't get much better than that, especially for a watch that looks as clean and contemporary as one of that.
Yeah, and it's one no one really talks about, you know.
I have to agree. And you don't really see them on social media. You don't really see them in the community nearly as often.
Exactly.
No, I think that's a good choice, that definitely. And I've heard good things about that brand. David, what is your next most expensive?
So it's really nary about a $200 Canadian difference between the two. So it's not much of a deal between the two choices I've got. But the one I'd have to go for is already on my wrist. And that's the Longines Spirit Zulu Time, which I think represents right now the direction that Longines wants to take. And that is to bring about what has made them successful in the past. And that is the Heritage Collection. All of the watches that resemble a collection of yesteryear, right? But now bringing on with a modern flair and a modern twist. So I've always felt like the Heritage line, if it was an ode to the watches of the past, the Spirit line is pretty much a look into the future. And now what they're doing with the Spirit line, especially with the Zulu Time, they've blended kind of both of those elements together. Of course, you're getting the ceramic bezel, but what really strikes me as something that's a return to classic form is that very light gray anthracite dial that has individual numerals applied. And when you look at the depth of the numerals, they sit ever so tall on the dial. They almost cast a shadow on the dial, if you will. And I have interacted with numerous watches leading up to the likes of Vacheron Constantin in person through the lucky ability of interacting with others in this watch community, I've been able to observe these watches. And I'd have to say that for under $5,000, maybe even under $10,000, if I will, Canadian, you are looking at a watch that will outpace in terms of its overall quality right up front, the finishing of the case, the elements that blend together, that is the bracelet that can be removed with one press of a button on the backside. So they're taking a recipe out of the Cartier playbook. If you look at the Cartier Santos with the quick release, that is a wonderful thing to have. I cannot wish for that feature to be on more watches right now. Like, that's my number one thing. And then coupled with the fact that you have a movement that beats at 25,200 vibrations per hour, has the longer power reserve of up to 70 hours, and it is a true traveler's GMT, it really bites at the heels of Tudor.
Jump hour.
And Omega has the jump hour adjustment. That's right, the jump hour traveling adjustment. It really bites at the heels of Tudor and even Omega within that that price point. So the retail of the Zulu time is about £2,300. So converting that over now would be about $3,700 Canadian dollars. And I'll just give you some forewarning. There will be a little bit of money left over in my collection.
Ooh, nice. He's pocketing, guys.
Nice. Yeah. That's right. Good. And I think you know, watching your videos and social media has actually brought that watch to my attention, and it's a really nice watch, definitely. And if it wasn't for yourself, I wouldn't even be aware of that watch. But, you know, I am because of you. You know, because I'm one of your followers and all that. So yeah, good choice. Good choice. Yeah. So mine is, you're right, Tudor, and I couldn't decide whether to go for, so kind of almost in line with what you've just done, going for the GMT, the Tudor GMT, but instead, I do like this particular type of watch. I just like it to play with and everything, and it just give it a bit of a different dimension to my three watches, was the Black Bay chronograph.
Okay.
And the chronograph has got the tachymeter, and I do like the tachymeter. It's a racing style watch. I'm not going for the white. I'm not going for the panda. I'm going for the reverse panda, the black with white. I've had one of them. I've had a black with white before, and that's probably my preferred over the white with black. Mm. Wanted to be a bit different from the Rolex as well. It's cask. It's got 70 hours power reserve, in-house movement, and it's 200 meters water resistant as well. So that was the other fact of mine. All my watches are at least 200 meters water resistant as well, which is good because I like water sports as well. So yeah. I could, you know, wear them all when I'm doing water sports as well. So
you're well prepared for somebody to push you in the pool. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, well, that's it. You never know, do you, when that happens? And I think all of my watches, well, two of my three have got 70 hours power reserve as well, which I quite like that idea. So, yeah. So that was, I thought, a good choice as well. So yeah, that's my second choice. And there's not a lot of difference there, cause that's 4,220 where my Seamaster was 5,100. So they're pretty close, like your two choices. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So let me just quickly read from Abdullah Watches, three choices out, and see what you think of this. His first choice, Cartier Santos.
Wonderful.
Which I know, Bill, you also mentioned.
I love this.
Yeah, me too. I think we're all in the same audience here when we say Cartier is that brand that just seems to know exactly what their customers like and love.
Mm-hmm. It's a true watch person. True watch person as well, isn't it? Santos is, you know.
Just at a movement, right, though? Which is funny, you know, it's like they still capture the attention of people who love watches, but they use such a, you know.
Just quite different design, though, aren't they, as well? They're a bit different to the run of the mill. His second choice was a Nomos. I do like Nomos, and I was thinking of Nomos in my collection. Zurich, Weltzeit or something.
Yeah, that piece is actually absolutely fun to use and stunning. With one press of a button, you're migrating yourself through different countries, and you can see the rotating disc that's separated from the top elements that represent the other countries. So with one click, you basically are moving the hour hand through the different time zones. I think that is just so cool. My short interaction with that watch, if anybody is into a functional under the radar traveling watch, that's got to be one of those to consider.
I've definitely got to look at that one as well. I like that sort of thing. And his final choice, and I know he's a fan of this particular brand, he's had the chronograph version of this from this brand before, is the Sin 105 STSA.
Oh, yeah.
I know he's a big Sim fan. He's had the chronograph, the Salmon Dial chronograph, which again, I did see at the watch show a month ago, and I actually tried on, and it's a really nice watch. I know he sold it now. He sold quite a lot of his collection off.
Yeah, I think Zin, for the measure of the chronographs, they go so far back. They have so many iterations of the 105 and the 103, and even to the likes of the 903 that they have right now, you can trace them all the way back. So I think that being able to see that connection from the past to the present and how they've kept consistent is really nice. It's a lot like a Porsche 911 that's evolved over the years.
Oh, nice.
So I'd say that's a great choice.
Great car as well. Yeah, excellent. So the last one, we have got 7 minutes left. We might do it. If not, we might have to come back again shortly. So your final choice, Bill.
My final choice is, this was the one that I just kind of phoned in. Maurice Lacroix, am I saying that right? Aiken automatic blue dial men's watch, $1,200. It's like the fake knockoff, what do you call it?
AP Royal Oak.
Royal Oak. Yeah, exactly.
I think the Aiken has been a really interesting watch for Maurice Lacroix. And I think by measure that when you look at the time the watch was released, it was right at just the cusp of integrated sport watches being very, very popular, right? Mm-hmm. I think they were right there. And you can find them for not much money, but what you're getting in return is an exceptional dial with very, very sharp details. I've seen a few of them in person. They never fail to catch my eye. So I think that's a wonderful choice.
It's good. Just out of interest, has anyone seen the new Bremont integrated bracelet watch?
Yeah,
new Bremont. Yes. That looks really good.
Yeah. I think the case design and the bracelet are interesting. The controversy on the bracelet was that it was not too far of separation from what it's homaging, right? But to be quite honest, I think all of the sport integrated watches can be argued for that same statement that they're flying either too close or they're taking too much away, right?
I think Bremont now have got everything. I think it's probably at Henley, wherever they're based, near London. They've got, you know, all the machinery and everything. They're actually building everything. They're building the movements, they make the cases, the bracelets. And again, I think, Bill, that's definitely, I'm sure I've heard the chaps from Bremont, the two brothers, say, all you got to do is phone them up and you can have a factory tour, you can do what you want. That's definitely one for me and you, Bill. We should be thinking of going to Vermont as much as, if not even more than Chris Ward, if you want me to be honest.
Is that in England?
Yeah. It's a British company doing everything in the house, making a lot. And they stated on a podcast the other day that phone them up, they'll answer any questions. If you want to come and look around at their new factory, you can do. So I think we should.
What are we stopping? Like, let's go.
Well, leave that with me. I'll sort it out, mate.
I'll work with CW, all right?
We'll do both.
Okay.
Cool. Okay, David, did you want to go for your final choice?
Yeah, sure. My final one is got to be a Grand Seiko.
Oh, and nice.
It's inescapable by measure of, I think if one person has to have a dressy timepiece in their collection and they love Seiko and they certainly love the idea of something that feels almost like it's been crafted by one person, delivered by hand by one person, it's got to be a Grand Seiko. So the one I've selected is the SBGW231. Sorry if you don't know the reference, because I do know that the names often sound like printers and fax machines. But to be quite honest, the SBGW231 is the 37mm hand wound no date Grand Seiko.
Nice.
And you can get them for about $3,500 Canadian. So you convert that over to pounds, so you're looking at 2,200 approximately.
That is incredible.
What you're getting in return is a whole lot, though. I think, first of all, the hand wound movement. A hand wound Grand Seiko just sounds right and proper. Definitely. I think you're looking at the original Seiko Laurel that kicked it off for Seikosha, or Seiko for that matter, you would say the Seiko Laurel is almost a descendant or predecessor to the SBGW231 by far extension, right? We're talking a long ways away, but it's close enough to say it's a modern interpretation if you look hard enough and justify that. So that's got to be my choice.
Excellent.
Seiko, what did you call it before?
The Seiko SBGW.
No. Is there a proper term for Seiko? We've been just saying
Grand Seiko.
Oh, no. So Seiko, when they were very early in their inception, they were also considered to be Seikosha.
Ah, yeah. That sounds so much more Japanese than Seiko.
Yeah. If we can go into a whole history book kind of episode about that, but no, it's an amazing story of Seiko.
Yeah. How they've come. Nice one.
So far.
Right. Away. Right, I'm going to try and get this episode wrapped up in time. So mine, actually, obviously I had to put a Seiko in there. It's the Seiko Alpinist 1959 reinterpretation. It's not that one, though.
No, I know what you're talking about.
It's the one with the grey dial, and it's something like SPB2. You know the diver, it's 1-1, it's sort of like...
143.
But it's the 2. The one changes for the two. It's the same grey, which I think is more dressy. So it's a sort of field watch, come dressy watch, which kind of balances, and it's the grey dial as well. And it's got almost the faux patinery sort of hands and indices, which I quite like on that. It seems to go nicely with the grey. And I really like that watch. I'm actually thinking of getting the second one as well as that, because I really do like that one. So... That's my choice. I think you know the one I mean, don't you, David?
I do. I think I reviewed it on my channel, and I did say that's actually a really nice Alpinist.
It is. It was the one I tried on before I bought this one, and I really did like it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, smart choice.
Thank you. And so, you know, that gives me a good balance, good colors, types, and everything. So, yeah, I think we got some really good choices in there, guys. So.
Think we do. So do we have any money left over, each of us?
Exactly 10,000, so I've not got a penny left over. What have you two got left over?
Well, I've got about 1,300 left over.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. And I think I would use that money to treat the significant other to justify the purchases.
And what would you buy? What would you get for her? Would you get her a watch or something different?
I would probably get her a watch and treat her to a nice dinner and then have leftover for a vacation.
But what would be the watch? What is the watch?
Oh, that's a tough one. I would have to leave that to another episode. But if I have to say right off the top of my mind, I probably would get her a Seiko Presage. And it would be the enamel dial. So we're looking at one of the older ones with the enamel dial.
Is she a watch nerd as well?
Not quite, but we can change that.
Bill, wrap it up. We're...
Thank you so much for watching Watch Talk Across the Pond.